You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 102 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I am delighted to be joined this evening by Lily. Lily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Hello.
Thanks so much for coming on. We are here to talk about another Hirschsprung's story. And lots has happened in this story. But this is a real sort of feel-good one as well, I believe. Well, obviously you will tell a lot more later on. But I guess we'll kind of start, well, wherever you want to, really. We can start from the beginning if you want.
So we went to the hospital January 31st because that was originally my due date. And I was feeling a lot of pain, so they went ahead and induced me. And the labor went beautifully. I had him at 1:54 in the morning. By 3:30 that afternoon, I went to put him down to swaddle him, and he choked and turned blue. NICU nurses came rushing in, and they took him to the NICU to do some tests and kind of feed him because he was not taking any bottles or any fluids, like he wasn't accepting nothing. So when they took an ultrasound, they realized that he had a blockage in his abdomen that was right near his colon. So they kind of watched it and kind of took ultrasounds every day and was like, okay, it's like a small regional hospital that I gave birth at. So they went ahead after the fourth day to transfer him to a major children's hospital where they have more machines and more equipment to do more work. So about the fifth day of us getting to the hospital and getting comfortable, they decided to take a piece of his colon out, kind of do a little procedure to where they took a good piece of it and kind of watched it grow over the next couple of days to see if there was no nerves or nerves in his colon. So I want to say maybe after a good 3-4 days of it growing, they came back and told us that it had not grown nerves and that he does have a condition called Hirschsprung's disease. Me and my wife were kind of looking at each other like, oh no, like, you know, what was that? You know, we're very unfamiliar with it. I've never heard of it. And he's like, okay, this is what's going to happen. So he kind of sat us down and he explained to us. And the major thing he explained to us is Hirschsprung's enterocolitis, which is fevers, disgusting poop, hard tummy, things like that. And it could be very fatal within 24 hours if not treated. So he kind of explained, kind of watched Oakley, my son, a little bit. And maybe a week after, they decided, okay, let's feed him. And he did amazing with feeding. And he said, we're going to start something called irrigation. So we put, trying to think of the words to say it without, they gave us a hose to flush fluid and push fluid up his rectum to kind of try to pull everything out. And he did beautifully with that. So after a good 15 days of being in the NICU, they decided that he was doing amazing and they've never seen a baby with this kind of condition that was doing so well. So they sent us home for about 3.5 weeks until they were planning to do a major surgery called a pull through. They gave us the day through surgery. We arrived at the children's hospital. We went back into the room to wait. They did their test. The surgeon had came in. He has an amazing surgeon team. Like, I wouldn't trade his surgeon in for the world. So they came in. They were like, okay, we're going to take him back. It was a 4.5-hour surgery. They when the surgeon came back out to tell me after surgery, he told me that he had put four small incisions into his belly with a camera to kind of look around and see where that dead piece of colon was. He went up through his rectum with a laser and decided to cut a good chunk of his colon, and he pulled it to his rectum. And they watched him for a couple of days until he went to the bathroom. And once he started going to the bathroom, they decided to send us home. And now we see him every 3 months to get checkups for it.
Right. I mean, that's a heck of a first few, well, a couple of weeks, give or take, 15 days, you said, in the NICU, which is, yeah, a long time to spend there. And then when they did the initial biopsy,
yes.
Because sometimes some doctors and surgeons are different in the way they explain how much of the colon's affected. So did they say whether it was short segment, long segment, or?
Yes, it was after they watched it for a couple of days and realized they had told us that it was a short segment.
Short segment.
Yes. Which it was by the grace of God, it was a very tiny piece.
Yeah. I think from the research I've done and from people I've spoken to, short segment is the most common, with it being, I think it's about 80%, give or take.
With the long segment, they do require them removing the colon and putting a colostomy bag in, which was an option if the pull-through surgery did not go amazingly and successful.
Yeah. I guess that's the thing as well with they can do the biopsy, but until they've actually been in there,
right,
they don't always know exactly how much they're going to take out, I don't think.
Right.
Some surgeries say that they give you it in measurements. Some just say short, long, ultra short.
Right.
Protocolonic, whatever it may be. But no, that definitely sounds. And a lot of people come to me and they say, oh, well, Hirschsprung's is genetic, or it's, you know, this, that, the other. I'm presuming this is not a condition you'd ever heard of before.
Right.
So no sort of history or anything within. Nothing.
Yes. My side of the family does not have it. My wife's side of the family does not have it. We went through an IVF clinic to have a baby, and that person that we went through, they didn't have it. You know, the person. So his medical team did say it is a very common disease, and most people don't know about it until they go home and years later.
Really?
Yes. So a lot of people, when babies are born and you think, oh, your baby can't go to the bathroom, oh, it's normal because they were in the belly for so long, or oh, it's the milk, or, you know, you tend to think of so many things. And then when you finally go and be like, hi, you know, my baby is really crying and really upset, you know, then they do tests. And a lot of people are amazed when they hear that word. I had to explain to my whole family about it.
Oh, I can imagine he did. Yeah, it's one of those conditions where it's not a 2 minute explanation either.
Right.
I imagine it's like, right, okay, this is this, and then this happens, and I imagine it was a little bit of a more of a sit down conversation. Is that right?
Right, a long sit down conversation, and okay, this is what happened. I had to draw them a picture of what the surgeon drawed me and showed them, and yes.
Wow. So, yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a complicated illness. But that's interesting that they believe that it's more common than, I mean, the generic terms, obviously, one in 5,000.
Right.
Which I think makes us rare, but not like ultra rare. I don't know what
right.
term it is.
Right.
But from some of the surgeons I've spoken to, they have of the same opinion, where they think actually it's more than that. It's probably more like one in 3,500 or 4,000 or whatever it might be.
Right.
And that might be the reason, as you said. I know I'm just sort of surmising here, but that might be the reason you said some people might actually not know that they've had it, or
right.
do I say have it or have it, until until they go home, and they may think, oh, actually, I've struggled with stomach issues.
Right.
And might not even, because like you said, you know, you went to a smaller hospital and then a larger regional hospital.
Right.
A lot of the small hospitals, I can't imagine, have heard of Hirschsprung's a great deal.
Right. Right. Or they don't have the equipment to be able to, you know, do small procedures like that, because the hospital we went to was very small. Very, very small. Their NICU is very small. And when they transferred us to the children's hospital, as soon as I was there, they were able to explain to me what was going on and what they were going to do and what tests, you know, then waiting 4 days for answers. You know, I got answers right away and they started doing stuff the next day he arrived.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously that's far helpful for both of you as well.
Right.
Far more helpful than sort of coming back, waiting. And then like the biopsy, for example, doing the biopsy, you can have that sort of, that can then come back pretty quickly rather than going away for, I think you said, like 4 days or something.
Right. And not know nothing.
No, no.
Yes.
So you said you're in the NICU for about 15 days or so.
15 days.
How did you, I guess, pass the time in that 15 day period? Because I know that can be, having spoken to a lot of mothers, it's that sort of, you can't necessarily do anything. You can't leave. You can't, you know, do the operation yourself. How did you kind of negotiate that?
So the main thing that I did was take a lot of walks outside of the hospital. Is a beautiful walk around, as well as a mini golf like thing that you can play mini golf in. And there's a basketball hoop. So there was a lot of things to do outdoors. And we went to a lot of like activities they had in the hospital, coloring, you know, make you a basket. You know, I went and made a lot of things for my son, you know, to help pass the time. And we ended up staying in his room with him the whole 15 days. They let the parents stay. So, yeah, we did not leave one day. My heart hurt when we went to the gas station for 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. So you don't want to leave at any point, do you? Because for whatever reason. But yeah, no, it's good that you were able to stay in his room with him as well.
Yes.
That's excellent to know, because then you can be, you know, with him at all times, which is fantastic.
Right. And they also did include me every morning in rounds. They asked me if me and my wife would like to stand out there and listen to all the doctors talk. So we did that majority of the days, but some days I just sat back because I'm a worry wart. So I ask 1,001 questions. And sometimes I felt like I didn't let them talk or get what they had to say before I jumped in and was like this or this or this. And they were like, calm down, let us finish. So.
But that's the thing, especially with it being a condition that you never heard of before.
Right.
That a lot of families go through this similar situation where they haven't heard of Hirschsprung's, never mind
right.
Note what part of the body it might affect. Well, right. You are going to have a million questions, aren't you?
Yes. And I feel like the you get answers and then there's more questions and then there's more questions, to where my surgeon, my son's surgeon, sat us down for a good hour and a half, 2 hours, kind of like, okay, let me dumb it down for you. Okay, this is what's going on. This is what is going to happen. This is everything. Here's a paper. I highlighted some stuff too. You know, like, he was very understanding with us and helped us a lot.
That's really good to hear. That is really good, because you can. So when people start going into medical terminology, and sometimes for doctors and nurses, it's everyday language for them.
Right.
You know, they're talking about ganglion cells. They're talking about that and the other. And sometimes they can talk to you about all of this stuff, knowing what they mean.
Right.
The fact that they weren't. Yeah. Yeah. Because like you said, it's completely new to you. And it almost, I don't want to use the phrase dumbed down, because I think that's
right.
But it needs to be, simplified.
Right.
A little bit, just because it's so new, and these are completely new terms that we're having to get used to.
Yes.
But it's good to know that they went through that with you and were really good and supportive and all of that, which is fantastic. And this was the larger hospital?
Yes, it was. It's a A1 rated hospital.
I presume that's a good thing.
It's an amazing hospital. They treat every kind of patients.
Fantastic. Yes. No, that sounds, A1 sounds fantastic. So I presumed it was a good one.
Yes. The NICU nurses in the hospital I gave birth at made a joke saying, don't lose in contact with us after you go to that children's hospital and see how beautiful it is. And I make sure to this day that I still give updates to his NICU nurses at the hospital he was born at, and kind of, you know, walk them through. And yes.
Fantastic. And if I take you right back to the beginning, you said giving birth in January, and we are talking about this January just gone, January 2025. So Oakley is only about 8 months or so.
He just turned old. 8 months on the 1st. Yes.
Fantastic. So yeah, so he's one of my youngest people to be on the podcast. That's fantastic. So, Dave, thank you so much for doing this as well, because I know
you're so welcome, right?
Eight months after giving birth is.
I have to be very honest. Watching your other podcasts and watching your videos have gave me a lot of strength and a lot of courage to be able to post more and tell his story. And I wanted to share his story, that way any other moms or any other family or anybody that just feels alone with any, you know, health condition that their child has, you know, I'm here to lend a hand, to lend an ear, you know, to lend a shoulder, you know, just help the community.
That's brilliant. Because I think there is, way before I got there, a really good Hirschsprung's community online.
Right.
And I know there's, I mean, so interviewed most of them. But I think that kind of support is, like you said, is so important. I know probably my parents 30 years ago would have benefited from having some kind of, whether it be the forums, whether it be the Facebook things, whether it be TikTok, whether it's, you know, Instagram, whatever it might be. What else, I guess, from those sort of TikToks and the TikToks, what else have you found, or who else have you found really sort of beneficial, do you think?
I found another mom on there who I do watch. Her son, I want to say, is maybe 6 or 7, and they are quite in the hospital a lot. They, unfortunately, he does have a lot more problems and a lot more issues. But I always tell her, you know, I'm praying for him, and, you know, I tell him. So sometimes I don't want to, not necessarily brag, but to tell everybody how much of a success my son has when I hear other people's stories. you know, it's like a kick in the face. And I personally don't like that. So I'm like, you know, oh, my son has Hirschsprung's too, you know, and if they go to my page and watch the video, then they watch it. But I'm not the type of person to be like, oh, well, my son is, you know, good. You know, I love hearing all stories. I love children. If I could have them, I would have a ton of them, you know. And so I'm just now starting to get into more watching more videos. I try to kind of check out who you have on your podcast. That way I can, you know, try to learn a little bit more. But yeah, I'm excited to see how many more others I can meet.
There's so many. I mean, so many people. And those are just the people I know. And I know that I'm missing loads and loads and loads of people. So yeah, I think for people who think, oh, well, you know, it's such a rare condition, I won't find many people, or I've got a child with long segment or whatever it may be. Right. You might think, oh, well, actually, I won't find that many people. There are a lot more, I think, than maybe people first realize. But I take your point as well when you mention, because Oakley's doing so well, it's almost harder in a way, because you then feel, actually, I want to share the success when people are going so well? But I think I'd look at it, yes, slightly the other way and go, actually, the more success stories we share, possibly the more, I know everybody's different and, you know, and we're never going to say this is how this is going to happen or whatever.
Right.
But the more success stories we share, the better. I think that does give a lot of hope to people, because I think sometimes when I read a lot of stories, you know, people who message me and whatnot.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And I do hear lots of things that maybe don't go so well, or maybe people are struggling with this, that, and the other. Sometimes to hear that things are going really well,
right,
I think is a positive.
Yes, very much. It's amazing to hear anybody's story and to hear, you know, anybody, you know, I love hearing any kind of stories. I'm on the whole medical side of TikTok, so I hear all the stories about all these, you know, health conditions, and it melts my heart.
Yeah, it's one of those where Because there's so, I mean, there's so many different varieties of Hirschsprungs, and then all of those varieties come with their own potential other conditions as well that are associated with Hirschsprungs, and everybody's completely different. That sometimes just hearing actually things are going quite well,
yes,
is really nice. And I know I've been getting messages from people who want these kind of episodes that we're doing today, where it's not so much drama involved, right, potentially. And it is very much a case of, yeah, this happened at the beginning, but actually, you know, 8 months.
It turned around.
Yeah, and things are going well. So just sort of on that point, I guess, how is Oakley now?
So Oakley is doing amazing. His surgeries have healed completely. His incisions have healed completely. We do not have to do no more irrigations nor dilations. So he is kind to, his surgeon said, just let him go. You know, even if he goes to the bathroom one time, two times, you know, three times, it's good. Long as it's moving. His stomach is always very soft. Okay, come
on. Do you want to come and say hello? Come on in. For audio listeners, Oakley's just joined us.
So he is doing amazing. The only thing that was a big trouble for us after is that he had skin tags from the surgery. So it took a while for them to go away. We're still using the special cream that we used when he did have surgery. So those are just little minor things that we still have to do. But he's doing amazing.
Really? That's so, so good to hear. Because like you said, you know, with surgeries and whatnot, obviously there's all manner of things to think about and what have you. But great to hear that he's doing so, so well. And I think you mentioned that the pull-through was around 2 months old. Was that right?
Yes. It was March 27th, so he was almost 3 months old.
Almost 3 months.
No. Oh, no. I'm sorry. Almost 2 months. Yes. Almost.
Yeah, January to March. Sorry, my bad. It's late here.
No, you're okay. I wasn't even thinking. Time has gone by so fast. These months have flew, and I told my wife the other day, I'm like, okay, hold on. I got to tell you his story again and make sure I remember everything that happened and make sure I'm saying everything right. And there's a couple times where she was like, hold on, this is what it's called. And I'm like, this is why I needed you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I imagine, again, when you're, I guess kind of go back to the NICU as well, when you're in the thick of it,
right,
and you're talking to doctors and, you know, you're spending lots of time in the NICU, I guess all of it, well, certainly when I've spoken to other people, all of it kind of melds into one great, right, big blur. Was it similar for you?
It was definitely a lot. It was a rush of emotions, rush of feelings. It was very confusing, like, oh my goodness, you know, is this something that I could have prevented, you know, being pregnant? You know, is there anything I could have done? And every surgeon has says, no, ma'am. She said, no matter how many tests you could have taken, we would have never been able to tell you that he had this health condition from being in the womb.
No, and I get that again from plenty of parents who say, oh, could I have done this? Did I eat the wrong thing? Did I? No, basically from, like you said,
right,
with every surgeon you've spoken to, certainly every surgeon I've spoken to, it is just potluck.
Right.
That's it. And that's so difficult sometimes to rationalize.
Right.
Because I guess as humans, we want to rationalize things.
Yes. Yes.
And we kind of want to say, well, this happened because this happened.
Right.
And it's really, really difficult to sometimes just go, nah, nothing we can do.
Right. And that was another thing that kind of except upsetted me is that there was nothing that me or my wife could do for him while he was in the hospital or why they were running this test, you know. With the feeding tube down his throat and all these surgeons coming in and out and, you know, tests getting done on him and, you know, him being only a couple days old, you know, was a lot for both of us, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine that was, yes, a heck of a lot, especially as 15 days prior or a few days or weeks prior, you'd never heard of this condition. And then suddenly you have to become almost experts in it, I guess.
Right. 100%. Yes.
So, and that's the one thing several things, but one thing in particular that I do really admire about parents of children with Hirschsprung's is the amount that you have to take on in such a short space of time. I mean, you have no time to think, no time to kind of process anything. It's right. These things that I never knew existed before, like dilations and washouts and ganglion cells and shrink segment and biopsy and all of these terms and all of these things that you didn't know existed a few weeks ago, suddenly you have to become an expert in it.
Right. When they ended up taking a piece of his colon out to watch it, they like I said, they used medical terms. And then after they did it, they kind of sat us down and was like, okay, this is what we did.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
Wow. So that is, yeah. And then you have to.
Yeah. Like, right. You have to be like, okay, well, any answers? And they're like, no, it's going to be a couple of days. And then every day you're like, okay, anything. And then they're like, no, we'll come in. And your anxiety and your heart and, you know, you just get that nauseous feeling in your stomach. Like, oh my goodness, could it be, you know, short? Could it be long? Like, you know.
Did you?
No answer, but just waiting.
No, exactly. Exactly. And there's. And that's not like a doctor fault. Right? It's just one of those things you just have to. It's just a waiting game, unfortunately, sometimes, especially with things like biopsies. And in that time, did you sort of Google stuff and try and find out more? Because I know some people are like, no, I don't want to Google anything. And some people are like, we want to know everything.
Yes. I did a lot of research myself. I had a notebook that I kind of jotted everything down. I looked at a lot of images. And I'm not going to lie, Googling it was very scary. It was the things that sometimes it tells you or the pictures that it shows you, you know, it is very fearful. So, you know, like my surgeon, he always tells me, listen, you can't listen to everything that has Google. You know, read it. Jot it down. Any questions you do have, you come to me, you ask me, and I will tell you true or false. So that's what I did. And every couple visits he had after his surgery, I would say it was every either month or 2 months that we had to go back and see him to do monthly checkups on him. And I would write down all my questions or all the things I read, and I would take it to him and I would show them, you know, and I'll be like, hey, this is, you know, my question, you know, is this true? And you don't know how many times he told me no, just log off of Google.
Yeah,
just log off. Yeah. He's like, let me send you home a packet and you read through that packet and you highlight everything and do your little notes and all that on the packet, and that's all the true information that, you know, you need.
Yeah, so definitely.
To this day, he still explains the Hirschsprung's enterocolitis to us. They were very on top of us about that, you know, because we are young, and they, you know, didn't want us to not know what to do or get stuck in that situation. And that, you know, they were like, here's my number, you know, here's my card, you know, like, I'm going to make sure I call you. And I would say maybe 3 months, 4 months of him being home after surgery, they did give us a call and asked how he was doing. And then here recently, they sent a card with like 7-8 nurses that signed for him of the NICU team, and, you know, heard that he was doing amazing and that he will be going to the hospital tomorrow for a circumcision surgery. So they're all can't wait to see him. And it's just the love is so, you know, so unconditional and so real, and it helps you a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine that. That really helps. That, I mean, they took the time. They took the time to do that, because obviously we all know that nurses and doctors really care about the patient, right, and whatnot. But the fact they took time to call and send a card, and that's really, really good to hear. Really good,
yes,
to hear.
The one thing I can definitely say is build you a support team. Build you a support system. Have a support system. Don't, you know, want to keep everything bottled in and not explain to nobody how you feel about this. A support system is a number one key, you know, for parents that have children with this health condition.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, again, having spoken to several parents as well, they do believe that's really, really important.
Yeah.
And I know it's kind of sort of easy to think about, actually, a support system would be good. I think we all know that it would, but it's sometimes not as easy to open up, I guess.
Right.
Some, and everybody's different. Some people really, really struggle. I know you said at the beginning you found it very difficult to write his,
yes,
Oakley's story down, and that makes absolute sense, because it is, and I don't use this word lightly, and I know it's often overused, but a traumatic time. It is a traumatic time. Understandably, you're going through all manner of things that you didn't know existed beforehand, and now you have to know all of these things, and it's an incredibly, it's a bit of a whirlwind, I guess.
Yes, it can work you up and many emotions, and, you know, already having a baby and dealing with postpartum depression and really going through it, it's really good to be able to open up, whether it is a partner, whether it is a nurse in the NICU. The nurses, I was talking to my other friend, she's a mom as well, and I told her, I said, you know, you cannot find one nurse to just let all your anger out on, because you're just have so many built up emotions, and they're so sweet and so loving for your child, and come running if they hear a peep from them, that you can't find no one to get mad at, and you can't, you know, explode on anyone. And I think that's why walking helped a lot too. You know, I could go outside and I could scream, or I could tap my foot, you know, 100 times, or, you know, I can just look on my phone and cry, you know. So it was a lot of advantages to that.
Yeah, most definitely. I think walks are underrated, massively underrated. But sometimes, and again, everybody's different, but I think having that mechanism of release is, because there are going to be a lot of emotions, whether it's relief, whether it's anger, whether it's,
right,
you know, and everything in between. I mean, from my own experience as well, you kind of think, well, why me? You know, why? Why am I the one in 5,000? Why not the other 4,999?
Right.
So there's that emotion, there's that to think about, and there's the sort of relief of going, well, actually, I'm all right. You know, I'm okay. But it's, and I imagine you went through those as a parent, definitely.
Right. Yes. I think the main thing that kind of broke me in the beginning, when I did find out about this disease, that there was no cure, that he was going to have it for, you know, the rest of his life. And it could be something simple, or it could be something, you know, dramatic on him. You know, it's all in how you tell him the story and how you sit down and you tell him, and you know, when he gets, you know, he pretty much explained to me, okay, when he goes through potty training stage and he gets, you know, constipated and he has tummy problems and, you know, he has issues, you know, there's always, you know, you can always rely on medication to help, you know, suppositories, things like that, you know. And that's something that, wow, I didn't think of. You know, I thought, oh, bam, surgery, you know, bam, it goes away, you know. And yeah, it, but you know what? It doesn't make me love him any less, makes me love him even more. You know, like, it makes me really be on top of it. You know, I'm a stay-at-home mom due to the fact that I don't want to put his health and his condition in another person's hand that is not educated. You know, I don't want to put him in a daycare and something happens and they're not familiar, you know, with what he has. Or when we go to a pediatrician and I have to explain to a new pediatrician about it, you know, it's something that I believe that everybody should be educated on. And, you know, everybody should, you know, I believe that everyone a couple years should take classes on like medical conditions and, you know, health conditions, because you never know. You could see a, you know, baby in the public, you know, struggling and a mom not knowing, you know, you help, you know.
It'd be great. So. It'd be great if we all knew about everything. That would be one. It would definitely, but no, I think you're absolutely right there with what you say. Absolutely right. I think it is a tricky one. It is a tricky one to navigate. And again, when it comes to Hirschsprungs and when doctors talk about all sorts of things with you, they can often not necessarily talk in definites just because they can't, because it is so much of a varied condition. So I guess it is a little bit of trial and error and kind of see how you go.
Right.
Have you found that as well?
He is eating solids as of now. I did do my research about what foods to give him and what foods will not be good for him. So we've been kind of going on a list of what's good with his Hirschsprung's disease. And he's been doing amazing. He's been taking the food really good. Sometimes his stomach will hurt. You know, he'll cramp, you know, I can tell in his face. And we'll do just exercises. And, you know, if I have any major questions, I will send an email out to his surgeon. And his surgeon will kind of walk me through of, you know, what to do or, you know, like how to relax and calm down and see if it's this or if it's this. You know, they communicate very well with you.
That's really good to hear. Really, really good to hear. And just as we, I guess, come towards the end of this, I know I've asked a little bit about how Oakley is now and how he's getting on, and really, really good to hear that he's doing so well. So I guess I'll go a little bit further forward than that and ask a little bit more. I know Hirschsprungs and future is a little bit of a difficult subject because sometimes we don't really know, you know, what's around the corner, but what do you hope for Oakley's future?
Oh, there's so many things I hope and wish for him. And, I just hope that he continues to do amazing, you know, with his condition. And I hope that when he gets older, I'm able to sit him down and be able to talk with him and explain to him, you know, that this was not your fault. You know, it's just things can happen very unexpectedly, you know. And I hope he lives long.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you could play him this, play him back this podcast when he's old enough to listen.
I told my mom, she came down here a few weeks ago to see him because, you know, it's, I don't want to risk traveling. A lot of my family lives states away. So due to his health condition, I don't really like traveling if I don't have to, you know, just because his surgeon is here and just in case I have to rush into the hospital, I'm right at home. And, you know, I told my mom, I'm like, you know, I can't wait till he gets married and he gets, you know, meets a lady and I get to sit down with her and explain all the things I did to him, you know, when he was a little baby to help him with, you know, this health condition. And, you know, I can't wait.
Oh, that's so, so good to hear. But no, thank you so much for coming on. And I know it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, that I wish both you, your wife, and Oakley all the very, very best for whatever's to come in the future.
Yes, I really appreciate it. And I hope a couple years from now, we can be right back here doing it again.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you to return. Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.